This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Monkey Hut. No, it's the Matt McNeil. Well, it is the monkey. I mean, seriously, a trained chimp here. Matt McNeil Show. Patrick here today. Brett will stop by a little bit later on with Patrick Cooligan. We'll hear from them. Hello. So, Patrick, did you make it up to the Taco Bell shoot?
I have not had time to do that yet.
I still think that's one of my favorite things. Your modern breakthrough, your big technological advance is the shoot. Okay. It's a wheelbarrow. Really? Wow, that's advanced. It's got lights on it. I'm presuming they're busy. So I think you're off the hook.
I'm assuming I'm thinking they're gotta be busy for at least a week.
I think I'll go there and just say, you know, why the hell do you charge $1.25 more for sour cream? Come on, what the hell's wrong with you people? It's not that much of a luxury ingredient. It's sour freaking cream, okay? Those are the hard-hitting questions you will get here. You know, you can go and listen to other stuff, you know, but, you know, what you get here is, yeah. All right, so in Wisconsin, this morning, did you see the story? I don't know where this was at, but some knucklehead, man, I guess I should be careful. You get some young kid who doesn't know any better, I guess, but it sounded like it was adults, found a fawn. A deer fawn, you know, and this is just their natural thing. They when they're fawns, they find a little place, they just stay tuckered in a little ball, and they don't move all day, wait for mom to come back.
Yep, I did see this story.
Someone picked one up, and that's it. I mean, human scent on a fawn, that's it. The deer know to walk away from it. And so, you know, and all of a sudden you've got a deer that was a wild deer that you have to raise in captivity or else put it down, for God's sake. So it kind of changes it. So you leave fawns alone. You don't want to mess with them. Wisconsin, let me just preface this by saying, if you see what looks like a long dog but isn't quite a dog, I know you've had a few beers. It's Wisconsin. It's 10 a.m. You've had a few beers. You're probably a little bit drunk. It's an otter. Don't try to pet it. Okay. It's a cute little dog. Oh my God. It's biting me. How drunk could the otter get from the bites of a Wisconsinite? I'm not sure. At least one person is believed to have broken into a Wisconsin zoo. Open cages allowing some animals to escape. Two great horned owls and two otters from the Ochsner Park Zoo are missing, according to the Barbaro Police Department. Even though the otters may bite, this is my favorite. Even though the otters may bite, police emphasize there's no danger on dangerous animals loose. Just an otter bite. How many shots do you think you need to get if you get bit by an otter? I'm going to guess 6 or 7.
You get like 3 rounds of rabies shots. It's got 3 times the rabies.
We're going to stick this right in your tongue, too. No, no, we can't. You got to get it in there. Yes. I think you can say, for goodness sakes, they're otters. And they look playful. They're always the cute little animal in the net. The wildlife videos. Those are just adorable. Adorable. Yeah, I don't want to know how many diseases those things have on them.
The cute ones are always the most dangerous. You don't want to know what otters do to those fish they catch.
Man, they're the best kissers. Oh, no, I can't say that because someone in Wisconsin is, oh, he's okay. I can kiss one of them. It's been a lonely day. It's been a lonely few weeks, say, you know, or a lonely life. And you've got a few in you. You know, Packers aren't playing right now. So what do? A little... Hey, here's an otter. I hear I can kiss one. No, no, no. No kissing otters, Wisconsin. Zoo staff would like everyone to know, if you think you've located one of the owls or otters, please do not touch the animals. Although friendly, the otters will bite you if you attempt to pick them up or capture them. Barbaro Police Department said the break-in happened at some point overnight, resulting in the locks of some of the zoo habitats being cut. I'm hoping those are the only animals that are missing. You know, God, you know, I guess to a point, you know, the owls and the otters are native to the area. Well, I guess I don't know. I mean, I don't know what kind of otters they are. They're like Southeast Asian otters and stuff like that. Boy, they're going to be disappointed. I mean, yeah, it was they're out. I want to say this, and you know, jokes aside, most animals in zoos today, to my knowledge, have been raised in captivity. And many of them come from other zoo-based animals. To my knowledge, I mean, I know that's kind of one of those things where they stopped the importing of animals a long time ago. And they only have certain, I mean, in some states have very strict rules. And I think the U.S. Zoological Association has very strict rules about, you know, who can breed animals and what animals can be bred. So most of these animals have, I don't know the case specifically with this Wisconsin zoo, but these animals have probably always been, you know, in captivity and probably have been, were born from ancestors who had as well had raised in captivity. So they're not the same as a wild animal. And so I understand you're like, I'm going to free the animals and get them back to nature. These animals probably haven't had too much experience with nature. And they don't know what's out there. And, you know, last I checked, I think owls can be taken out by eagles. You know, I'm not sure exactly. I mean, owls, there's not a large list. I mean, I don't know too many people that have an owl stew or anything like that. So I don't think there's too much concern from humans per se. But I do believe the larger raptors will take them out if they, you know, it's a territorial thing for them. Otters, I don't know. And once again, it depends on whether the otters are from that area. And I don't think they'd have that much of a problem. But God forbid they have to go through, you know, they've been raised in captivity and they've been living in a climate-controlled habitat. And then all of a sudden they're not captured and it's November and you're like, okay, what's going to happen here? It's a tough way for them to go. So just, I don't know what your intent was when you went to unlock the gate, but you probably did more damage than good, that's for sure. And God forbid they actually have to put some of these animals down to get them back into safety. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. An update from yesterday about, we were talking about deflection news. Now, what's deflection news? We have this January 6th, the hearings are going to start here on Thursday. They are not going to go well for the Republicans. It's already pretty clear they've got a lot of evidence. And a lot of my guess is they're going to start off by saying, oh, yeah, we have connections from the White House and Trump to, you know, these people, to these people, to these people, these people. They're all coordinated. They're all working together. And this was an attempt to overthrow the government. And there's no other way. You can't candy coat that. You cannot candy coat that. So the Republicans have already started to throw a billion things at the wall to try to deflect away from talking about January 6th. We talked yesterday about, oh, gas prices. Oh, my God, gas prices. Gas prices. Oh, my God. Yeah, the private industry that's basically gouging the living daylights out of us and has done so repeatedly over the ages. I mean, this isn't a new thing. They've done this a lot. So, no, you're trying, you know, unless you're arguing that the United States government should take over the coal and oil and gas industries, then I don't quite know where you're going with that outside of just trying to dumb down the issue just so you can blame Biden to try to get things off the front page. That doesn't work. Oh, I don't know if you've heard the second one I mentioned yesterday was the caravan. Oh, that's right. You know, the Republicans today really took off on that one. It's like, the largest caravan of all time is heading for the USA. What are you thinking it's going to be like a guard wall in a zombie movie that just you're going to tell the Border Patrol to, you know, lock and load and, you know, it's going to be like Starship Troopers and you're going to start shoot down on the crowd because they got to be stopped. Is that what you're saying? Dear Lord. I mean, I don't quite know. I mean, they can get to the border, but okay. And I will make sure I mention this once again for all you Christian fans out there. Gospel of Matthew, welcoming strangers from strange lands. It's in there. Direct teaching of Jesus. That's right. So anytime these clowns go out there saying, these people need to be stopped, they're basically making Jesus cry. So the Gospel of Matthew, go look it up. It's in there. It's all in there. God forbid. I'm a liberal because of my Christian belief. I'm a liberal because of my personal Christian belief. Once again, disclaimer, you do or don't do whatever it is you do or don't want to do. Mm-hmm. Then the other one we mentioned is, oh, this supply chain employment. Oh, this business might have to close down because they don't have enough people working here. Oh, my God. Or the supply chain is not going to be there for you. Oh, gosh, there's a shipping container backups in San Diego. What's going on? I don't know why you sound like Seinfeld at the end of that, but still. Needless to say, once again, it's not like it was at the beginning of the pandemic. I was looking at the photos from the beginning of the pandemic and walking into grocery stores and empty shelves after empty shelf after empty shelf. Although the frozen rhubarb was still in there. No one was touching the frozen rhubarb, but everything else was gone. Seriously. I thought that was kind of, everything else is out of the freezers, but the frozen rhubarb, still plenty to go around.
Must have not been strawberry rhubarb pie.
It was a little early yet. It was a little early for that. That was a pretty stark reminder. This is just all made up stuff. So now there's two new paths of deflection news that are going to be put out there. Now, first of all, and the first two are mentioned, I've got two strange bedfellows here, but they're both kind of idiots. So, you know, they both kind of went down this. Ted Cruz was speaking up on the Capitol. Grunting, making glorified fart noises, whatever you want to say it. Ted Cruz gone out there and basically he started talking, why aren't we talking about black people? And that's really what all he was saying is, why aren't we talking about black people? We're going to be talking about all these. It was in context to talking about the Buffalo shooting and white supremacists and gun violence and stuff like this, but it's tying into 1/6, and you'll see how it ties in here in just a second. But it was this, what are we talking about this? Why aren't we talking about this? You want to talk about gun violence. You want to talk about 1/6. Why aren't we talking about black people? And that's basically how his entire thing went down. Don't worry, Amy Klobuchar had our back. She said that Cruz's comments failed to mention the FBI reported that the racially and ethnically motivated violent extremists, 87% of which are white supremacists. So there's a reason we talk about. By the way, and you should know that, Ted. They're your supporters, you jackass. You're an actually horrible human being. No, really. Your facial hair is rejecting your body. I'm just letting you know. It's seen inside your head, and it doesn't want any part of you. I'm just, You look like a, if we shaved down Ted Cruz, he'd look like a Dick Tracy villain. I mean, yeah. Look out. It's the vanilla prune. Ah! Oh, okay. I just dated myself there with a Dick Tracy reference, by the way. I know. The vanilla prune. Can we make that Ted Cruz's new nickname? The vanilla prune. Please. Please. Lord, I know I'm not on your good side most days, but please. The other person that chimed in on deflection news was, I'm just going to read this story, among those who are both siding this issue, the whataboutism, one of the most harrowing and troubling events in American history is Washington Commanders defensive coordinator Jack Del Rio. How long ago was Del Rio here with our team?
Was that about 30 years ago now?
God. The defensive coordinator for the Washington football team, Jack Del Rio, in response to a tweet suggesting that Americans need to know the whole story of January 6th, Del Rio, who's probably been hit in the head a lot, said this, "We'd love to understand the whole story about why the summer of riots, looting, burning, destruction of personal property is never discussed, but this is #commonsense. Wow. Hey, Del Rio, you're an idiot. No, seriously, you are a moron. You really are. Now, first of all, you and your racist kind, you know, if I can say it, have constantly talked about black people all the time. So you got there saying nobody's talking about this. What are you doing, man? Now, I'm not saying Jack Del Rio is necessarily racist, but a lot of racists have put this forward. So I'm a little skeptical of how Jack Del Rio is running down this path, because most of the time when I hear about, why aren't you talking? You know, I don't care about a boogaloo boy. A black guy took a tube of Colgate from a Target. Why aren't we hunting that criminal down? And you're like, Jesus, really? Really? Most of the people that talk about that in that way, racist. And so here's Jack Del Rio. Cosplaying? I don't know. Jack, you'll need to explain that a little bit for more for me. But it is, it's you're kind of dipping your toe in the pool there, I'm just saying. This article goes on here, and they did this well. First of all, the events of summer 2021 aren't never discussed. They are discussed primarily by those who believe the organic reaction of police violence against minorities equates to calculated, strategic, and sustained effort to sell a lie to the American public about the outcome of the 2020 election, and then to use a combination of constitutional chicanery and brute force to overturn the will of the people. Second, there's a real difference between a disorganized mayhem and a calculated assault on the seat of governmental power during the process of certifying a presidential election and the express urging the elected officials who aligned with them. What happened on January 6th is precisely what many had feared in the weeks preceding. It was in many ways worse than expected and in many ways better than it could have been. And that's for true. But here he is. It's once again, it's like, you want to talk about how they tried to, it was the worst attack on the U.S. Capitol since the War of 1812. Do you know they busted a window of an auto zone in Minneapolis? Why isn't anybody talking about that? For God's sakes, can I just, on behalf of all sane human beings on the planet, will you pathetic mules shut up? You guys have constantly screamed about this, constantly talked about this, and you talk about it all the time by making your first statement being, why isn't everybody talking about this? Because you don't want to talk about other things, and you're basically like pushing racial tropes, and that's all you're doing, you clowns. Seriously, I don't know who's the bigger idiot, Ted Cruz or Jack Del Rio, but here it is. Deflection News, what about ism? I'll take a break. Come on back. There's one other one that they're doing, which is, to a point, actually even more nefarious. I'll talk about that when I return. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Deflection News. Once again, Thursday, the big hearing started on January 6th, and it's not going to be pretty. And so Republicans are trying to find some way to not, you know, have to report on it. And Fox News, and I give Ron, who is watching the show, it's video, it's radio for your eyes. You can watch the show if you so desire. You just head on over to AM 950 Radio on Facebook or Progressive Citizen X Matt McNeil Show. You can watch the show there. Hello. Yeah. Ron makes a point. Will Fox News viewers have any curiosity to question why the channel isn't covering the hearing on Thursday? That's the other one. You can pull like Fox News. They're not going to cover the hearings. Why? Now, I want to make sure we point this out. This is a news channel, news, who has decided they will not cover the hearings to lay out the case against a former president who tried to overthrow the government. A plot where many of the people who work at Fox News have been implicated in being part of. And their entire answer is, well, we're just not going to air it. We're not going to put it on the air. And they're going to hate rage watch their own channel praying that no one watches anywhere else. Now, I'm going to guarantee you a lot of people are going to be watching everywhere else. But I do actually want to say this actually is, to a point, more nefarious, because there are a lot of people who will not watch any other channel, period, let alone news channel, any other channel, period, than Fox News. And so if Fox News goes quiet on this, or their entire argument is, you're not going to believe the lies they're telling to try to make these people look bad without actually reporting on the evidence that makes those people look bad, they're actually going to do a pretty successful job of, at the very least, keeping the Republican core base completely in the dark, as they want to be. I've talked about how that's the modern Republican, is that they will actually see something in reality. They'll see something in reality that goes against their narrative. They'll instantaneously make up some sort of bigoted fairy tale, apply that to there, and then and that became their new reality. And so you can sit there and it'd be like, okay, that person ate a hot dog. No, he didn't. He had a hamburger. No, he had a hot dog. Did you have a hot dog? Yeah, I had a hot dog. No, you didn't. You're both lying now. You're both part of the conspiracy. I know it was a hamburger. You're like, geez. But that's what these people do, because they do not want to look at reality. This is just going with their brand. No, I'm not going to sit there and say that, you know, we should necessarily take people and force them to watch this stuff. But I would say this, it to a point, you have to understand a large reason why that crowd went and attacked the U.S. Capitol on January 6th of last year, is because they've for 30 years had a narrative, not the news, a narrative delivered to them. And when they started throwing, and Fox News and these pundits started throwing the idea that the election was stolen, that the reality is their people just gobbled it up because they've been brainwashed. In my mind, personally, Fox News is a co-conspirator in what happened on January 6th. And frankly, I think their executives should be hauled up to Capitol Hill as well and asked, what, you know, why was this? We'll play video clips from your shows. Whose decision was it to encourage this sort of thing and make them sit and squirm? They like to say, well, our news is not necessarily Tucker Carlson. Well, then who decided on Tucker Carlson's show to put out the narratives that fueled this fire, or Sean Hannity's show that fueled this fire? Give us a name. What was the purpose? And of course, it goes, well, we were just trying to put out all different positions. Well, then why did you, when did you put out the position that the election wasn't stolen? When did you ever do that? No, this is the latest deflection news. It's just basically not even talk about it. So I want everyone to do me a favor, okay? There's going to be a ton of video clips every single day. I want you to share them constantly. Seriously. I want you to do this. I want you on Facebook. I want you on Twitter. Heck, if they allow you to do it on Instagram, you could do a dance while you air them on TikTok. I don't care how you do it. Go old school. Find all your old Republican your relatives who keep emailing you memes still to this day and start sending them video clips. Do it. Seriously, do it. Yes, some right-wing fools will be furious and they won't be your friend anymore because, God forbid, you make them look at reality. But the way that you will wake people up is to make them realize there's an entire narrative, a reality-based narrative, that is out there that they are not hearing from the certain people that they have trusted with their news. So starting on Thursday night, we're going to have a hoot. Friday, start plastering all your neighbors, all your friends, all your relatives. Get them all. Social media, emails, however you want. Text them. Oh, trust me, I'll be doing my part on this station. It will be fun. Maybe we'll have a campfire. We'll have a campfire and make some s'mores, and we'll talk about how horrible all these people are. because they really are horrible people who tried to overthrow the government of the United States and end democracy as we know it. And so I want to see all the gory, juicy details. And I guess it's going to be on us to make sure everyone else sees them as well. So if you could, please. Thank you. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Thanks very much to Todd Kolod, who is sponsoring AM 950 this week. Todd is a former listener who moved to Spain, and he is out there. And, of course, he's kind of gotten more involved in the European culture there, and he's been big on supporting Ukraine, and including his friend Paul Nyland, who has started Lifeline Ukraine. Now, once again, there's a lot of things that we need to do over there. We need to help out the people with military arms, aid, money, food, all these things. But one of the things I think that goes under-talked about is, you know, suicide prevention, mental health crisis. My God, these people are living in a war zone right now. And it's unbelievable. I mean, we have not had in this country large scale conflict of this magnitude since the Civil War. We really haven't. And what you get is you have a neighborhood that looks like, you know, look at the neighborhood you're around right now. Look at that neighborhood. Now imagine burnt out buildings. Exploded, you know, craters where explosions had gone on. Knowing that of your neighbors, you got out of that area, but of the 20 neighbors you had, most of them are dead. It's the mental health crisis that's going on there is extreme. Lifeline Ukraine, Paul Nyland's organization, offers mental health services, suicide prevention for the people of Ukraine. They have got, I posted this up on the social media. They've got a Patreon page right now. If you can, go make a donation, help out. There's a lot of ways you can do it. We talked about, and I think it was Todd that was the first one to mention me, all the Airbnbs. People are still renting out all the Airbnbs in Ukraine and sending them the money for the Airbnbs, even though some of them have been destroyed. So, you know, there's a lot of ways you can help out. This is a simple one. Because I can tell you right now that the demand for mental health services, suicide prevention in Ukraine is extreme. Lifeline Ukraine, find the link on our social media pages and make a donation and become a Patreon there if you can. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. So there is there's a story, of course, that a lot of people have you know, paid attention to, and that's, and I'll just read for the state trial for former police officers. To Thao and Alexander King and the killing of George Floyd have been delayed till the beginning of next year. On Monday, the attorneys representing both former Minneapolis police officers were denied a venue change by Hennepin County Judge Peter Cahill. I'll get back to that here in a second. Cahill granted them a rescheduling for a joint trial set to begin on January 5th, 2023. Jury selection will take place on January 9th, according to the court records. The trial was originally set to begin on June 14th, with opening statements beginning on July 5th. King and Tao are both each charged with aiding and abetting second-degree murder and manslaughter in reaction to Floyd's death. Their fellow officer, Thomas Lane, accepted a plea deal earlier this last month, which means he'll avoid a state trial. Lane will serve 3 years in prison, according to his agreement. Court documents show the attorneys representing King and Tao have argued for the venue change due to the ongoing publicity the case had, including this year marking the second anniversary of Floyd's death. The state has argued the pair are seeking to hamstring the state and leave the jury with a skewed account of what occurred, further stating that the motions have nothing to do with promoting trial efficiency or assuring the jury receives an accurate account of the events that occurred. Cahill didn't budge on his decision to keep the venue the same, explaining that the pretrial coverage and the trial itself was covered all throughout Minnesota, making it pointless to move. Now, there's the other reason. Let me talk about the move of the trial first. And it's something that Jack Rice brought up. And he brought up, you know, multiple times. He's like, where else are you moving this trial to? Now, don't fool yourselves. These officers want to move this trial to the reddest county they can. and say, we're going to pick people from that area to be the jury. Because they feel as if that is going to give them the best chance at walking away. I'll get back to that in a second. But the reality is that, you know, Jack brought it up. It's like, okay, let's just talk the security you're going to need for this trial. You go to some of these county courthouses, you go to, like Hennepin County Courthouse or something like this. They're used to having larger trials, more security, you know, more safety points within the trial area. Go out to some small county where they got a county courthouse, which is in the town square, that has never had a major trial of this magnitude. Where are you going to put this? And even Jack brought up, you know, Rochester, Duluth, St. Cloud, Moorhead, none of those places are going to be a better option for putting this trial than in Hennepin County or Ramsey County. And the reason why is because you need to have a courthouse, a site where security and crowd control are things that are being taken care of. And I can tell you right now, I can imagine most county attorneys would not want to have a trial of this magnitude. Can you imagine the amount of people that would be in their trial? They wouldn't want something. And if all, and God forbid, you know, these two officers are, you know, because we got video. I don't know if you've seen the video. We've got video of them. You know, if they all of a sudden walk because a jury comes out saying, we ain't ever going to hold no cop guilty, period. And that's the end of it. Oh, God forbid that, you know, that community could end up having a lot of problems. Because a lot of people will be really and really angry and justifiably angry. Now, that's not saying that you're condoning violence or anything like that. But my God, that's why you want to have the trial someplace where they can handle it. And really, in the state of Minnesota, the only two places are Hennepin or Ramsey County. That's really the only two places you could put this. I got to imagine even places like Wright County or Sherburne County in the metro would want anything. I mean, the security headaches alone on that. You know, the worldwide media that's going to be there. And now a lot of these places, they don't have the capacity to do anything like that. So that's going back to Jack. So once again, Cahill's denying of the moving of the trial is valid. His argument, though, and I should make sure I mention, Cahill's argument is, well, the trial's been covered everywhere. So where are you thinking that the jury pool hasn't been exposed to this trial, this case? So, and he's right there, too. I actually want to bring up the other part of this, and this is now a campaign issue. This trial is going to begin on January 5th. The new attorney general, if there would be a new one, whether that's Keith Ellison getting a second term or a Republican, either Schultz or Wardlow, becoming the attorney general, they will take over that case if they were to become the attorney general. And so the question has to be asked, will they just drop the charges? Because my guess would be is, yep, the Republican attorney general will walk into that court and saying, we think enough damage has been done. We don't see the need to hold anyone else accountable. These officers' reputations have been permanently, I think that's punishment enough. I mean, it's theater. It's speculation. But do you think I'm really way out of bounds here? Of course not. Because that's what's going to happen. You're going to have a Republican attorney general that's going to come on out there and say, well, you know, I just don't think, I think the citizens of Minnesota have had enough of all this, so we're going to stop and we're not going to prosecute these officers. The federal government can hold them accountable. I imagine most of you, especially in the Twin Cities metro area, especially if you're in the city of Minneapolis, are like, what? But that is what is more than likely going to happen. Now, I mean, I imagine, first of all, I have no faith that the media in this town will ask them that question. How would you proceed with the case against the two officers? And the argument is like, well, they can't talk about it. What are you talking about? They're taking office. They're going to have to immediately grab the reins of this case. They better have a plan in place on what they're going to do. So the idea that they can sit there and say, well, I'm not going to talk about any cases that are in front of they're going to be in front of the court. No, you're going to take over. This is going to be the bellwether case for you the second you walk into your office. You are going to have to prosecute this case or walk away from it. What are you going to do? And they, trust me, the Republicans, they don't want any to admit, oh, well, I don't want to talk about a case. I don't want to do anything. Will you continue with the prosecution of these two officers as the current attorney general has? Yes or no? I can't speculate. Trust me, what's going to happen is they're going to do it like that Virginia governor. He gets into office, he runs this. I'm really a moderate. Gets into office and within minutes starts passing extremist bill after extremist bill after extremist bill after extremist bill because he knows, as I have said numerous times, Democratic outrage lasts as long as about sour cream. And so in 2 weeks, people will forget about it. And so he knows that they could, this if the Republican Attorney General came into office and let these two officers go, yeah, people will be outraged. People will be mad. And mind you, and the Attorney General will say this. He'll say this with a straight face. I know the people of Minneapolis are upset about this, but the people from my part of the state, they think this is the right thing to do. Well, the crime happened in Minneapolis. Don't the people of Minneapolis deserve to have their wishes represented? No, this is now a major point in this upcoming election. Will the Republicans prosecute these officers? And my gut feeling is no. They'll walk into office because they know it'll be the first day in office. They'll say, we're going to let these officers go. Because their most ardent voters don't ever want to see any police officer held accountable, let alone a police officer who killed a black man. They don't want, no, that you see, I don't have any evidence to justify what I'm about to say, but, George Floyd deserved it. That's what they'll say because it's based in bigotry and racism in their small little walnut-sized brains. And the reality is these guys don't want that to be held against them. So I understand that they don't want to answer this question, but this should be the question. And frankly, DFL, if I can make a suggestion, if they refuse to answer how they will proceed on this case, there's your billboard campaign against them, especially in the suburbs. Oh, you want them to get trounced in the suburbs? You start implying, well, it sounds like they're not going to prosecute these two officers. In my mind, I guess these officers are hopeful, are praying a Republican wins the attorney general's race. Because then that's going to be their ticket out of any jail time. Or at least they feel as well. It will be. I mean, does anyone look at Schultz or Wardlow and think to themselves, oh, yeah, they're going to try to hold those two officers accountable? Of course not. God, no. Not even close. So I beg the media, the news media of this state, please start asking that question because that's a viable question. And the people of Minneapolis, I know that the Republicans like to think of the people that live in Minneapolis are some sort of subhuman species. They're not. They're human beings who have been emotionally drained by this entire experience. And the last thing they need is some uptight, jackass Republican attorney general saying, you people need to shut up. These guys have had a tough time after what happened. I'm going to let them go. Because I can tell you what, you are not going to get this city under control by basically telling the people, you know, telling people that their concerns about the murder of a citizen by police officers is unfounded. But that's the ticket right now. So you guys got to make it part of the, this is the campaign right there. That's the attorney general's race right there. Will you hold the two officers who helped murder George Floyd accountable? Will you? 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Take a break. Come on back. Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. The Minnesota coronavirus update. Let's do that today. On Tuesday, of course, once again, this has got the weekend number, so this number is up there high, but it's starting to get better. I think it looks a little bit here at this point. I've got some warning signs. I've got our good friend Dr. Joe Eastman, who is our COVID modeling expert. He has he sent out some information and some numbers that show that, you know, there's going to be a, you know, it's going to be a bit of a rough stretch here for BA4, BA5 coming through in July. He's got a new algorithm that shows that in the numbers there, but he's working on some new models here. Hopefully maybe he'll join us later this week. But when I look at the numbers as they're seeing now, and once again, I'm not discounting 4 and 5, especially now that you hardly see anyone wearing a mask at all anymore, and especially in crowded buildings, I'm a little bit hopeful. Maybe we are making a turn here. Tuesday's COVID-19 update from the Minnesota Department of Health includes 4,058 newly reported cases, 8 reported deaths. The state COVID death toll now is 12,682. Today's update includes 72 hours of data from the weekend. Henceforth, the numbers are higher than a typical 24-hour period. Through June 6th, the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota was down 400. It's down from 427. Of those hospitalized, 38 people are in intensive care. That's down from 46. 362 people are in non-ICU care. That's down from 381. And once again, we should remind you, before this current wave kind of kicked in, we got down below 100, or below was it below 200 or below 100 on the number of cases? And so we were doing pretty good there. So hopefully we can start continuing that number and getting it down again into a more manageable level. As of June 5th, the state reported that 3,918,511 people have received at least one dose of COVID vaccine. 3,714,261 people have completed the vaccine series. There are 2,439,602 Minnesotans up to date with their vaccine shots, all the boosters. Total number of cases, and once again, I'll say it every time, the number of cases that are there are grossly undercounted, but the official number is 1,521,933. The grossly undercounted number is a fourth of the state's population. A grossly undercounted number. Did you get free COVID-19 tests from the state of Minnesota with expiration dates shorter than you got from like a gallon of milk? Fear not. State health officials said Tuesday, federal regulators extended the usefulness of the iHealth rapid antigen tests for 3 months behind their listed expiration dates, giving Minnesotans more time to use them if they develop symptoms or ahead of travels or group events. The extension will reduce waste from Minnesota's 615 million giveaways of $6.5 million giveaway of 1 million COVID-19 home tests. Tests might be needed less than in the summer when public health experts expect lower COVID-19 levels in Minnesota, but more of the fall ahead of any surge in coronavirus infections, especially when schools reopen and people spend more time indoors. So yeah, let's see. 3 months. So if your expiration date is today, and today is the 7th. Is it the 7th today? Yes, yeah, the 7th. 7th today, June to July, July to August, August, September. So it would be right at the beginning of your school year. But if, say, your expiration date on your test is towards the end of this month, well, that's good, because then you'll have a full month of school in. And that way that test, it probably will still be able to work, which is good. This moves the expiration date for most of these tests well into the fall and some out as far as the end of the year, said Gary Bowman of the Minnesota Department of Health. He said in a written statement, people can look up the new expiration dates by entering the lot number of their tests on the manufacturer's website. Minnesota reported an uptick in the orders last week after the state doubled the allowance for households, allowing them to obtain up to 4 free kits of 8 nasal swab tests. Nearly 700,000 tests have been ordered. Many Minnesotans were surprised when their kits arrived this week with expiration dates as early as mid-July. Well, but still, though, you're definitely there. They're onto something there when they say September is where you're going to want to have those tests handy, because that's when the kids go back to school. And one of my daughters was like, maybe she's thinking about maybe getting a job at a daycare. And I said, okay, you know, when school starts in, you know, everything, you know, when those kids go there, if you work there, you're going to get everything that they've got, because that's just how it happens. And I remember when we had kids, holy God, when we'd send them to daycare the first time, God, they would come back with a sniffle. I was basically on the iron lung for 2 weeks because it was just brutal, especially with your first kid, because you haven't been around those kind of viruses in a while, and you're like, good, it hits you hard. Well, you know, that's when you get around kids, and even high schoolers and junior high kids, that's where the chance of the exposure is going to happen. So keep that in mind. Keep those tests. Don't get rid of them. And by all means, please still get vaccinated. I keep saying this, get vaccinated. It helps. It does. Wear a mask. I know a lot of people have given up on that, but it does help. It does. Social distance if you can, and just be careful out there, because once again, I don't want you sick, I don't want you dead, and I don't want you bankrupt for the rest of your life. Hour 2 coming up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show on your Tuesday. Matt, Patrick, Brett steps into the studio. Hi, Brett. How are you today?
Hello, hello.
The Twins play the Yankees. Have we already lost these 3 games? I don't know. I just don't quite know what to think about this team.
Bailey Ober just went on the DL just to add yet another player. Who are they even going to pitch in this series?
Well, at least we have now our COVID, you know, a vaccine denier.
The
COVID crew is back with us. The vaccine deniers. They've just done. It is amazing how poorly they've done against the New York Yankees over the last 20 years.
Yeah, pretty much since the Tom Kelly era.
Yeah.
I think the first few years they had Gardy, they did all right. But then when they lost in the playoffs, I think like 2003 or 2004, that's when that hex started.
Yeah, and they just, how many years have they lost every game to the Yankees at home and away?
Yeah.
I mean, just it's.
They almost seem to play worse against the Yankees at home than they do at Yankee Stadium, which is saying something.
Well, there's tons of Yankees fans at these games. Patrick, what do you think?
You know, I was actually thinking about this, and I think you can actually trace all of this back to one moment. I think it was in 2001. The Twins played a game at Yankee Stadium. I think it was the 12th or 13th inning. The Twins were leading 12-9, and the Yankees hit a grand slam to win the game. And everything since then has been like that. And I kind of think you can trace everything back to that one game.
Who was our superstar closer that got clobbered by the Yankees and then just never came back? Do you remember that? Oh, God.
Matt Capps, wasn't it?
Was it Capps? I can't remember. He was our closer, goes on out there, and he launches the ball into the upper deck of left field, and he never came back.
I'm thinking it wasn't Joe Nathan. I mean, he struggled against the Yankees, but still had a career. Yeah, it had to have been Capps like a couple of years ago when he was the closer.
They scared Joe Nathan so much his mustache fell off. His beard stayed, the rest of the beard stayed, but all right, enough baseball talk. What was the prank you did? Did your class do a prank?
By the time I was there, we had already had so many at Eden Prairie that they really put the kibosh on that, and we really didn't have a chance. But yeah, there were like chickens released in the school, I've heard in the past or something. Yeah.
Chicken? So this is back when Eden Prairie was mostly farms then.
Yeah, this is like back probably like earlier mid-90s when you hear those legends of what happened at the school back in those days. Who knows how much of it is urban legend and how much of it is true. But apparently we used to do some of those back
Right up the road from us on 212 at Shady Oak. There used to be a farm. We used to go buy eggs there in the 80s. So, yeah, there used to be farms. There are still – I don't know how many farms are left in Eden Prairie, if there are any.
I moved here in 92, and there were still some around, I remember, as a kid that you could see kind of near that Flying Cloud area.
Or is there a store that sells chickens? You know?
Yeah, yeah.
No, I don't need the frozen ones. I want some of the live ones, yeah. Like a lobster tanker. Yeah. That's kind of morbid. All right. So yeah, that was usually what happens is things get out of control, rules are put into place, and then it you know, you might get a toilet paper too, or you know, a TPing exactly. or two, but nothing too extraordinary. Now, last week we had. Prior Lake went nutsoid with pigeons and balloons of water and balloons of flour. Oh. And that didn't go well. Southwest became an episode or became a redo of Warriors. There was a chaotic scenes at Southwest High School in Minneapolis. Students damaged restrooms through trash cans around the school to mark seniors' final day. Scenes unfolded last Thursday at the school in the Fulton neighborhood. With Minneapolis Public Schools saying it's happening during the final celebration for seniors, but involves students at all grade levels. Who doesn't love the purge? Minneapolis Public Schools told Bring Me the News that the incident resulted in vandalism, damage to restrooms, and thrown objects, with work now underway to identify the students involved who will be subject to discipline. Okay. While the extent of the damage has not been detailed by Minneapolis Public Schools, there are posts on the local Next Door page from parents who were told the sinks broken off the wall, causing water to gush from the building, trash cans. Hey, St. Louis Park. Trash cans hurled through the air. Are you ready for it? All right. The hard hand of justice is about to fall down here. Following the incidents, Principal Valerie Littles-Butler sent an email to students and parents announcing there would be unexcused absences for all who took part. Jesus. Let me get this right. You rip a sink from a wall and chuck it down a hallway, and, well, you know what that really means. You know, this is your perfect attendance record is now in jeopardy.
Oh, I'm sure next year's senior class is going to be having second thoughts about doing pranks. Guys, I don't want an unexcused absence.
Whoa, guys. We're about to tear down a wall here, but do you remember the unexcused absences last year? Oh, I don't know if we should do this. Gosh, it's gonna be like a HGTV special in that place next year.
Yeah, kind of will.
On Friday, there was an all-day purple freeze in place, which meant that the hallways were cleared and students were not issued any passes. While the school was also put in place to update a safety plan for the rest of the year. Well, seniors' final day was Thursday. The rest of the school year will continue to Minneapolis till June 24th, owing to the three-week delay resulting in the educator strike early in the kitchen. Early in the year, you might want to put a sign on that one bathroom because I don't think that one's going to be an order for a while. It's not the only example I mentioned. Prior Lake, two pigeons. They released two pigeons inside the school premises and also threw water and flour at students.
They got a pigeon in there. Oh, that would have been fun to... I thought I'd say sarcastically, yeah, to try to catch it and get out of there.
Well, the pigeon's not going to want to leave. It's the lunchroom, for goodness sake.
That's
it's a pigeon.
Yeah.
It sits all day under a bridge picking up rocks, hoping one of them's food. You're going to put them in a school lunchroom. Heck, you're going to have come into the school lunchroom in Prior Lake, and the ceilings are going to be lined with pigeons because they're reproducing. They're going to be looking. They're looking at your Salisbury steak, buddy. Watch out! They're going to come after it. Oh, well, you know, they have birds in. They got birds in the Mall of America, don't they? I think they got birds in it. Yeah, I think they do. I don't think they electrify them. I don't think Patrick Starr is there with the electrical for the birds. I don't think it's that kind of a twist. I'm pretty sure there are some birds in there.
Oh, there's got to be. If you're thinking about Camp Snoopy, I'm thinking by the roof, maybe there's got to be some flying up in that area.
I don't know Prior Lake. I don't think they'll get away with Prior Lake, but it would be entertaining to watch some teachers have to get a pigeon out of the school. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It is a Tuesday. That means we always get a visit here from the Minnesota Reformers, Patrick Cooligan. He's got a bevy of stories you guys have been covering.
I liked his column that he was talking about today with this settlement with Linda Tirado. She was the photographer who lost her eye in the wake of the George Floyd protests when she was shot at by the police. And yeah, Patrick does a nice job tying this into Andy Mannix and then Max Nesterak of the Reformer being at least the city of Minneapolis was asking for a deposition and trying to get all of these personal records from these journalists, which seemed pretty excessive since all they were wondering were they targeted by the police as part of that settlement with Linda Tirado. So we'll talk about that. And then I also like this story, too. These legalized cannabis parties might be changing their name since some activists don't like being tied to the Republican parties. And I like one of these proposed names. It's the Marijuana Advocates with Government Aspirations, or MAGA. That could be one of the new changes we have. So,
two things. One, for the dope people, and not saying you're dope, but you like the dope. The problem isn't your name. It's the fact that the candidates are not really your candidates. That's your first problem.
Yeah.
Maybe you shouldn't smoke so much dope and realize. I'm just saying, all right. Hey, dude. In regards to that, I still want to remind people of the journalists that were attacked, and they were attacked. We were all here. We remember that journalists were being targeted. Not one officer, to my knowledge, has been held accountable for any of that going on, but yet they did go after the journalists who were being targeted to find out who their sources were, because that's the only thing that seems to matter to them.
And Tirado, lost her left eye. She is blind in that eye permanently. And that is unbelievable. Yeah. A journalist being shot at by the police.
And they were going after him. That was just and once again, this we're going to hold accountability. Not one officer has been held accountable for knowingly attacking journalists.
And it just so happens that Andy Mannix and Max Nesterak have been writing hard-hitting stories against the Minneapolis Police Department, so they just happen to be subpoenaing them for records.
Bless Mannix and Nesterak. Bless those two, because those guys have been absolutely spot on every single time. They are great bastions of journalism, and I'm glad they're there. I can see why Cooligan's going to refer back to them here. Patrick Cooligan from the Minnesota Reformer, right here with Brett Johnson on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson with you here on a Tuesday afternoon. And as usual on Tuesdays, we're joined by the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer, Patrick Cooligan, as we'll be talking about some of the latest stories and columns in the Minnesota Reformer, talking about the special session that could be coming up. Also, more misconduct from the Minneapolis Police Department and possible harassment against journalists, as well as the grassroots legalized cannabis party possibly changing their name to try to siphon some votes away from Republicans instead of Democrats. Patrick, thanks so much for joining me on the show today.
Always a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. So let's start off talking about the possible special session coming up, because today DFLers have announced that they are calling on Minnesota to take gun control action in the wake of the mass shootings that we've seen recently over the past few weeks in Buffalo, New York, and Uvalde, Texas. So what exactly are the Dems asking for in their proposal, Patrick, that they just put out today?
So they are looking for what are known as red flag laws. This would allow, after a hearing, law enforcement to seize the guns of someone who's been determined to be not safe to have firearms. They also want to raise the age of their age requirement for people to buy an AR-15 style rifle to 21. And then they want to expand background checks to private sales and gun shows. So it's a fairly standard set of legislation, wide public support, but I'm afraid the press conference is probably where this thing is going to end.
Agree with you, because as we look at the GOP right now, they're already hesitant about going into a special session, and I have to imagine this makes it even less likely that they would be up for going into a special session if gun safety is on the agenda. So I imagine this probably isn't going to push Jeremy Miller, the Republican Senate leader, any closer to call to at least wanting to have a special session. Should point out it's Governor Walz that gets to call it, though.
Right, I don't think that the Senate Majority Leader Jeremy Miller, who's been in that role for less than a year, I don't think he actually has control of the caucus. I mean, I think even if Jeremy Miller, by his own, he's known as kind of a pragmatic deal maker. He may want to go into a special session and cut a deal, but I don't think he has the support of his caucus. And he needs to have support of his caucus to do anything. And I think that the members of that Senate Republican caucus, they see the possibility of taking the entire legislature next year, and so they don't really feel the need to make any deals right now when they can get something better in the legislative session next year. And there's also the possibility of a Republican governor. And former state senator Scott Jensen, who's the Republican nominee for governor, has said that he's made calls to members of the Senate GOP caucus and told them, you know, hold off, don't cut any deals, because you're going to get something better when I get elected governor. So I just don't see the politics lining up for the special session, which is too bad because the legislature really didn't finish what they started. There's the school districts are really in a lot, hurting a lot right now. There's a public safety needs. So there's a lot to do, a lot of needs. The money is there, but it just doesn't look like the politics are lined up properly. Republicans are going to resist a special session, and we'll just have to see how the election turns out. That is my best guess at this point. I mean, there's always a chance, of course, but I think that the odds of a special session are very long.
Now, it is, of course, Governor Tim Walz who is the one that gets to decide whether a special session gets called. So it could be easy to sit there and think, well, why doesn't he just call a special session? But I think there are some risks that would be posed to him and the rest of the DFL if they were to call that special session. So let's break that down a little bit about why Walz just doesn't call one right now, because I think people who might not follow politics that closely would think, well, isn't it just easy for the governor to call one and bring all the legislators back?
Right. Well, he can call a special session. The problem is that only the legislature can adjourn. So, you know, and once they get into session, the governor is usually, they like special sessions to be highly constrained so that, because you just can't control what lawmakers are going to do. Also, during a special session, the lawmakers can raise money. Unlike a regular session, they can raise campaign money so that they have no reason not to be in session passing all kinds of things forcing tough votes for Democratic senators. And that's just not what Walz wants. So he wants to make sure that before they go into a special session, they've already got a deal worked out.
And I imagine, too, yeah, if there was no deal worked out, that could open the door to the Republicans possibly trying to remove more commissioners, which is something they have done in the past and have the power to do. So, yeah, there certainly would be some risks for Governor Walz to call that session. But I think you and I are in the same boat here. Probably unlikely that we're going to see one called unless they really strike some sort of deal ahead of time. And that's probably not likely to happen, being the Republicans just really don't have the political motivation to do that right now heading into this year's midterm.
Exactly, and you raise a good point about Walz's commissioners. He's already lost a couple, who were sacked by the Senate Republicans. They've not confirmed hardly any of his commissioners, and so what they can do is come into special session and fire them as a way to fire up the GOP base. And certainly Walz doesn't want to go through that either.
Speaking with Patrick Coulican, editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer, I want to move on to a column that you wrote in this week for the Reformer, and this has to do with the settlement that was given to Linda Tirado. She's the photographer who was permanently blinded in her left eye when police shot her with a projectile in the days after George Floyd was murdered, and she was shot by the police in that case. They have reached a settlement for about $600,000 between Tirado and the city of Minneapolis. Now, other journalists like Andy Mannix over at the Star Tribune and your own Max Nesterak with the Reformer were also hit by projectiles as they were covering the aftermath of the murder of George Floyd. So, as part of this settlement and the case going back to Linda Tirado, they asked reporters like Nesterak and Andy Mannix, specifically those two, whether they had been targeted by police as Tirado alleged. So, before we dive into the column, what exactly was the city looking for from Andy Mannix and Max Nesterak? Because it sounds like this was a big invasion of privacy that the city was looking for from both of those journalists.
It was a broad subpoena. They wanted them both to sit for depositions, but then they also asked for text messages, emails, notes, just about everything you can think of for the 5 days after the murder of George Floyd, the key events of the unrest that followed the police murder of George Floyd. Obviously, we found this to be incredibly invasive of the news gathering process, and together with the Star Tribune, we opposed this effort.
Yeah, it is tough to fathom what the city could even do with all of that data and why that would be relevant, because they were looking for it allegedly because they wanted to see if those journalists were targeted by the police. And it's hard to kind of fathom what they would be able to gather by looking at text messages and other private data like that. I imagine there wouldn't be a lot in there. And that's exactly why, well, you guys were fighting that to make sure that that data wasn't released to the city.
Right. And what I found especially disturbing, and this is what I took up in the column, is that Mannix has written some of the tougher stories on Minneapolis Police Department in the last couple of years, including about their use with emergency medical professionals of ketamine, which was used, the very powerful drug that was used at the urging of Minneapolis police on occasion, the destruction of records at the second precinct while the precinct was burning in the days after Floyd's murder. He wrote about the kind of cowboy culture in Derek Chauvin's precinct. So, you know, he's written these tough stories. Our own Max Nesterak was our deputy editor, had written a big 8,500 word story on the failure of Minneapolis police to discipline its worst officers, and was literally called bad cops. And so you have these two reporters who've done really hard-hitting work on Minneapolis police, really embarrassing for the city of Minneapolis, and now the city wants them to sit for depositions and subpoenas all their records and text messages and emails. You know, I tend not to be a conspiracy thinker, but this looked awfully convenient for me to have to be really... as I say, invading the news gathering process with two reporters who have written such damaging stories about MPD in the city of Minneapolis.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist either, but it is tough to say that it's just a coincidence that they went after Max and Andy Mannix, who, as you said, were doing very tough reporting on the MPD. And you hope it's not the case of intimidation or anything like that. But as you say in the column, you're going to continue reporting on any misconduct of the Minneapolis Police Department, correct?
That's right. In fact, if anything, this has just increased our motivation. And in fact, Wednesday morning, we're going to have a story about police misconduct amongst all the officers who've taken workers' comp settlements. So your listeners can read about that tomorrow in the Reformer.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to read, especially since, as we talked about last week, a number of these officers who have put in a lot of overtime are making quite a bit of money, well into the six-figure range. So we'll definitely look forward to seeing that in the Reformer tomorrow. Make sure you go to MinnesotaReformer.com. Final news story to talk about has to do with the legalized cannabis parties, and specifically one, the grassroots legalized cannabis party, because some marijuana candidates in the past few election cycles have admitted that they were recruited by Republican operatives to run for races under the banner of the state's two pro-legalization parties of marijuana, and there is some evidence that they possibly could have flipped a number of close races that decided control of the state Senate. Well, now some members of these legalized cannabis parties and also DFLers are trying to fight back. So to rewind a little bit, some activists with the legalized cannabis party back in February tried to rename the party, and now they're pushing for a special convention to change the name. And some of the ideas they floated include MAGA, the Marijuana Advocates with Governing Aspirations, and the Constitutional Liberty Party. So this is interesting to follow along, because we have seen some pretty strong evidence that these legalized cannabis party candidates have had an election or have had an impact on the past few elections. So it is interesting now to see the DFL and some of the activists within the parties trying to fight back, feeling like their message has been hijacked by Republicans trying to take advantage of people maybe thinking about voting for third parties. So this is interesting to follow along, isn't it?
Yeah, and this is a story that I've kind of followed closely and reported myself beginning a couple years ago when we found these Republican stand-ins who have been put on the marijuana party lines with the intent, obviously, of hoping that voters, it would siphon votes away from Democrats. So Democrats have, and some people in the marijuana parties, specifically the Grassroots Legalized Cannabis Party, I mean, they kind of realize what's going on here. Their chair, Oliver Steinberg, has called for some ballot reforms to try to prevent this kind of gamesmanship from happening. But some other folks have gone even farther and said, you know, let's just change our name so we can avoid this this kind of gamesmanship by Republicans trying to take votes away from Democrats. And so they there was an attempt to change the name to, and I do credit them for their creativity, the Marijuana Advocates with Governing Aspirations, or MAGA Party. So you'd have a MAGA party line, and presumably there'd be some Republican voters, Republican-leaning voters who might vote for the MAGA Party and show their disgust with the Republican elites, I guess, and that would sort of balance out the efforts to siphon votes away from Democrats, but that didn't get anywhere. And then there was talk about having a special convention to again change the name, but they were unable to muster the votes. That they were going to become the Constitutional Liberty Party, which again is the name of it, in the hopes of siphoning some Republican votes. But that looks like it's not going to go anywhere either. They don't have the votes on the executive board to make that happen. So looks like for now, we're going to continue to have these two marijuana legalization parties as major parties. They've achieved major party status, which just makes it very easy to get on the ballot under one of these parties. And so it looks like the status quo is going to continue, but it's a really fascinating situation to watch.
So if they do end up changing the name, even though it looks like it is going to be unlikely, but let's say they do this summer decide to change their name to that Constitutional Liberty Party. Is that something that could make the ballot by this fall, or are we already too late in the election cycle for that to happen?
That's a good question. I think it's too late for sure for the primary.
Gotcha.
Because early voting begins early begins later this month. But I don't know the answer to that, but I do think that they that could work if they were to change their name now, that the name would appear differently on the fall ballot.
Yeah, that would be interesting if they were to change that name to see if they would possibly draw some votes away from Republicans, especially if they go with Constitutional Liberty Party or the MAGA Party. I still like that one. Marijuana Advocates with Governing Aspirations. Gotta love that one. Well, we are just about out of time. We have been speaking with Patrick Houlihan, editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. Make sure you go out to minnesotareformer.com for the latest in news and politics in Minnesota, including the story that they'll be breaking tomorrow on some misconduct within the Minneapolis Police Department. Again, minnesotareformer.com. Patrick, as always, thanks for the time today.
Always a pleasure.
All right, let's take a break and send things back to Matt McNeil on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Two stories I want to give you updates on. One is a beaut because the irony here is just spectacular. This comes from our friends over at Blue Stem Prairie, which is fantastic for covering outstate Minnesota news and news from the Dakotas. And this one comes from the Dakotas. There are ongoing protests at Grand Gateway in Rapid City. A tale of Rapid City hotelers' anti-Indian pledge makes it to the New York Times. The Rapid City Hotel, vowing to ban Native Americans, offered cheap rates to 2021 Sheriff Mack event. So this is a hotel that's out there, the Grand Gateway in Rapid City, that basically has said, we're going to openly discriminate. On May 27th, so a few weeks back, Connie Ure, U-H-R-E, the owner of Grand Gateway Hotel, was arrested for assaulting three indigenous protesters at the Rapid City Journal. She has been released on a MacArthur grant program following the arrest. The owner of the Grand Gateway Hotel, now here's the story here that she's quoting, was arrested on three counts of simple assault and was released the same day using a program funded by a grant from the MacArthur Foundation, which she has been publicly against. Rapid City police officers arrested Connie Ure, 75, May 27th, for assaulting three demonstrators outside of the Grand Gateway Hotel. In multiple videos from demonstrators at the NDN Collective picket line boycott event, Ure could be seen getting out of her vehicle, spraying at least three demonstrators with Pledge, a cleaning spray. At least one was sprayed directly in the face. NDN Collective began boycotting the business following racist remarks from Ure on social media, where she said Native Americans would be banned from the hotel's property, which, you know, that is, you're going to get shut down. I don't know who's going to eventually own that hotel, but maybe the Native Americans should be given the hotel after all this. Helene Dumel, spokesperson for the Pennington County Sheriff's Office, said Wednesday that Ure was released using a program funded from the MacArthur Foundation grant. The program uses what's called a public safety assessment. Dumel said the assessment is a strategy with the grant to make sure the office is using jail space wisely, just so we're not keeping someone incarcerated that shouldn't be, she said. She was charged with a low-level offense, hitting people with Pledge. Dumel said the assessment of the strategy with the grant to make sure the office is using jail space wisely, so we're not keeping someone incarcerated that shouldn't be, she said, who is charged with low-level offense. Now, the first thing I'm going to say here is the obvious one. Oh, let me get it right. The white woman is quickly released. When you have something of the same magnitude for a Native American, are they released as quickly as this? I would hope so. You have the grant money. In a presentation with more than 50 slides sent to the Rapid City hotel owners and to the South Dakota Citizens for Liberty, Nick blamed the MacArthur grants. This is Ure's son. In a presentation, he blamed the MacArthur grants for what he described as an increase in crime. He also blamed the rising crime rate on police inaction and Native Americans presenting the idea that a race war was on its way. Oh, that's nice. There you go. He's a dreamboat, kids. So once again, the brilliant irony of this story, is the one of the things that these two clowns, these two racist jackasses, have been protesting against is the same exact tool they use to get out of jail. Do you think we're about to see, oh, well, the MacArthur grants are not that bad? Oh, she is. And by the way, this Bluestem Prairie story has the image of her. She is not weathered well. How about I say it like that? During a picket line event, here's the coverage of the pledging of these individuals. This is today at the picket line event, which the NDN Collective has been leading three times a week for the last 6 weeks. Connie Ure, owner of the Grand Gateway Hotel, approached the boycotters, sprayed Sunny Red Bear, director of racial equity at NDN Collective, directly in the face with a cleaning product. Ugh. This is what we mean when we say white supremacy is violent, said Sunny Red Bear, racial equity director. No matter how long they lie dormant, people's racist worldviews eventually come out in their actions. Connie Ure already made her view of Native people clear when she said she'd ban all of us from her business, and when her staff followed through on that ban, those actions alone were violent. Now that we've seen what she was willing to commit, a physical act of violence in public and in broad daylight, I hope that people will begin to understand and believe us when they say how dangerous the real racism is. I will say this. I think she probably did it partially because she didn't feel like, you know, she's in Rapid City, South Dakota. I'm not exactly convinced the sheriff's department out there is going to, you know, hold her accountable, really. I mean, it's a low-level offense. They're charged her with a low-level offense and already got her home. So, I mean, I think the presumption here is that she's white, she won't be charged as a Native American would be. Connie Urie's behavior today was also racist, violent, and disgusting. It was also illegal. As Native people, we will not sit on the sidelines while our rights are violated, said Nick Tilson of the NDN Collective. The incident will be added to the federal civil rights lawsuit that was filed in March. We can now call upon the Department of Justice to intervene and hold Connie Urie and Grand Gateway Hotel accountable for these racist and illegal acts against our people. Can I ask, why is the federal government taking so long as it is? I think, you know, when you have someone who is so blatantly doing it, I guess, are they looking for a trend that they haven't rented a space to a Native American? And then henceforth, now that not only did they say they weren't going to do it, but then they didn't do it. And henceforth, I mean, I don't know how the federal government works, but on that level, but for goodness sakes, I think at this point you've got, you know, the evidence, especially, you know, through her own statements of what's going on. So take the hotel away from her. I mean, that's the way I'd say it. If you know, in this country, it's supposed to be that way, that if you're that much of a racist, that you basically, that the federal government, you know, basically will, you are going to lose your business because you can't be that blatantly racist. Now, I'm not sure exactly how it will fly in, you know, per se in South Dakota, but I'm going to take a pretty good guess that it's not exactly going to be the harshest penalty. Let's just put it that way. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. So there's the update on that, and we'll have to see where that goes. But I mean, at this point, you know, shut her down. And like I said, I think it would be pretty just to say to the Native American tribes of the area, we'll let you buy the hotel and you can take it over as a business. I think that'd be a lovely outcome of that story. Lovely outcome. Speaking of updates, I got to give one on this one. Now, generally, water main breaks generally don't get two conversations on this show, let alone, you know, one conversation, let alone two. But someone in St. Louis Park really screwed up here. The latest water main break in St. Louis Park is being called unprecedented sewage. Delicious. Speaking of which, we head to the Taco Bell up in the north. No, okay, great. Sorry. Sewage filled. They are going to send me a cease and desist letter. I just already know that at this point. Sewage filled dozens of homes, not once, not twice. But the same line, but not once, but twice, when the same line broke two times in a matter of weeks. On Monday night, there was an emotional meeting between homeowners and city council members who are trying to figure out how to reimburse them. By 10 p.m., the city agreed to an outline plan to pay some homeowners up to $120,000. That includes money from the city reimbursement program and the League of Minnesota Cities Insurance Trust. Still, some homeowners say they are not confident this won't happen again. One woman told council members, "Where do I turn in a receipt for the emotional impact on this?" 2 weeks ago, the city says 1 million gallons of water flowed from a broken water main affecting at least 55 homes. We talked about that. The city said it replaced part of the pipe, then that broke again several days later. Now, I want to point out something here. One of two things happened. Either they didn't fix the pipe correctly, or they failed to do a stress test on the pipe once they replaced it. Now, what's going on in St. Louis Park is going on everywhere where there have been established neighborhoods. And I can say what Richfield, St. Louis Park, Hopkins, probably Bloomington. I'm not going to say Edina because they basically gold plate that city. But, you know, these communities that were the first suburbs that kind of started blossoming out of Minneapolis years and years and years ago. They put down these original sewer lines, water lines, piping, whatever. And now that stuff is 50, 60, 70 years old. And it needs to be replaced. And I can say that they came through my house. Our neighborhood was built, I think it was in late 40s, early 50s. I live in Hopkins. About 5 years ago, 4 years ago, they basically came in and ripped up everything and relaid it again. And the because they'd gotten to the point where the patches, you know, the piping in some areas was more patches than it was the original piping. And as anyone can tell you, that's just a recipe for disaster, because you're going to have more problems there. It's not cheap. I get that. It's not cheap. It's a major headache. But if St. Louis Park is now starting to get to the point where their sewer lines and their water lines are just busting, and once again, 55 people, you got to put it in perspective. My guess is many of them did not have flood insurance, because I'm trying to think of where this was, over on Texas and Minnetonka Boulevard, I think, in that area. Is there a creek? There's a lake over there off the bike trail, but I don't think there's any creeks or anything there. So my guess is none of these people had flood insurance, which is immediately going to say, well, that's on you then. The Insurance Federation from Minnesota expects the claims to be in the million. Just like regular insurance policy where they could be deductible, there's a limit, so the city may not get as much as they wanted from the trust on that. They recommend this, using the situation as a learning experience. Standard homeowners insurance doesn't cover water main breaks. He urges people to consider adding an endorsement called backup of sewer or drains that starts at just $35 a year. This is the trigger that could get people asking, should I have this coverage? Anybody who lives in a city, older city, where you have water system problems, or if you have a basement you use a lot, or a minimum you have a sump pump, you should absolutely think about buying this. St. Louis Park and other meetings scheduled for June 8th, and the League of Minnesota Cities Insurance Trust will be there this for the first time to continue answering homeowners' questions. Which I guess that's a valid thing. I mean, if you're a homeowner, you need to check with your policy to find out, if something like this happened, would you be covered? And I don't know if this is the official term or if this is just the term for certain insurance, but called backup of sewer or drains, it starts at $35 a year. That seems like for a home, a pretty decent investment. Some of the photos you've seen of some of the damage that happened with these two water main breaks, that's a lot of money. And St. Louis Park is not a cheap suburb to get into. It is a very expensive suburb. And it's remarkable to me, because most of the houses there are relatively small original starter homes, but to buy one of them is, it costs you. So the amount of people are spending a lot of money there. They're in a neighborhood check with your sewer lines. When was the last time the sewer lines were replaced? That's, by the way, an easy call to your city. Whichever city you're in, contact your city, give them your address, say, when was the last time the sewer lines were replaced? If they come back and they say, oh yeah, it's been 30, 40 years or longer, then yeah, you might want to call your insurance company and have that as a backup, because then the question comes is, will the water main break before they fix it, or will they fix it before the water main breaks? And that's not a good way to go. So that's, you live, you learn. Doesn't help the people of St. Louis Park that got this thing to happen to them, but like I said, I think the question I got to ask here is, after the second break, did they not install it correctly, or did they not do a system test after they installed it to make sure the new, and they should have done that, because you're putting a patch on an established line. You got to run water through it to make sure it's not going to bust again. It happens, it happens. It eventually will, all this stuff will collapse. I remember when they were digging out, 35W, when they were doing that right outside the electric fetus, they were digging all that stuff up there, and they were saying, oh yeah, all the piping out there was all corroded, and it was only a matter of time. It's only a matter of time, folks. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break, come back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. The progressive voice of Minnesota, it's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. Speaking of course, that's Rush there, and I love the band Rush. Kate Bush, I was talking about Kate Bush and Running Up That Hill. If you've not heard, so Kate Bush, the British singer from the 1970s, 1980s is when she had most of her success. She was huge in England. And this is back before the days when the charts in England and the charts in the United States pretty much are the same now. But back then, it was wildly different. And she was discovered by Pink Floyd, if I remember correctly. And she put out a huge hit called Wuthering Heights, which was a massive hit. When I lived in Europe there, it's a classic over there. Kind of, you know, like Frampton Alive over here. It was a huge hit over there. She had quite a few songs. I love her. I became a big fan of hers in the 80s when she put out a few great albums. She kind of, you know, she's put out a few albums that have been very good, that have been very enjoyable. And I love Kate Bush. You know, I think she's fantastic. She was featured in an intricate plot point in the current season of Stranger Things. The song Running Up That Hill go see it. Just go watch Stranger Things. You'll understand. It actually plays that song plays a very integral part in the plot. And so all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the song was the number one on Spotify. It was number one on Spotify. It was number one on iTunes. It was huge. Billboard came back out today. Now, the song originally, this I think was her biggest hit in the United States, was Running Up That Hill. Initially charted at number 30 back in 19. Casey Kasem, back in this long distance dedication coming up in a moment. But right now, let's go to the charts. Number 30 is Kate Bush. She is British. It's not a bad Casey Kasem. I can do Casey Kasem a little bit. I can't do Shaggy, though. He did Shaggy. I can't do that. Anyway, but she hit number 30 on the charts back then. Billboard's newest chart, she's number 8. She's re-entered the charts at number 8. She's got the biggest hit of her career. You know, I don't know. Harry Styles is number 1. We'll have to see if Kate Bush can knock Harry Styles out of number 1. That would be pretty impressive. But yeah, and her album as well, Hounds of Love, is back recharted again. And so she's having a lot of great success. Here's the thing, which is weird. Now, as you know, I'm a weird guy. All right. I think we all accept that. I like the Canadian band Rush, like Kate Bush, Doctor Who. Weird. Little nerdy. I'll give you a great example with Rush. Rush, it made me so happy to see those guys finally get the attention they deserved. They had the third most platinum and gold albums of all time. Huge band. I know that you say that and you say you're kidding. Nope, that's true. They were wildly successful, still are very successful. They're wildly popular. They finally got the cover of Rolling Stone. They finally got they were having sold out concerts. You know, it was huge. I was so happy for their success. But there's a weird thing that's happened right now with Kate Bush, and there's a lot of really kind of dark, gothy fans of Kate who seem to be furious that people are discovering her now. How dare you? What is wrong with you people? If you're a huge Kate Bush fan, you're probably outside of the main cultural streamways anyway. But now your validation is coming in. For God's sakes, bask in the glory. You were there early. There you go. Instead, you've got these people like, how dare you become fans of hers? How dare you? She herself, Kate Bush actually did an interview, which she doesn't talk that. She does not do much media. She doesn't do much touring. She doesn't do much media. She came on out and she was tickled pink. She was so excited about this. And I don't think it's escaped me that she's like, wow, this is going to make me a lot of money. But the reality is that she's excited about this. So, if you are one of these people that all of a sudden your counterculture element becomes popular, don't be a jerk. Accept it. You were there first. Welcome to the party, pal. Just learn how to enjoy popularity and success. Try at least. Native Roots Radio is up next. You have a good one. We're back tomorrow. Till then, see ya.